Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The following podcast contains dramatizations of actual events. Certain situations, dialogue, names, and locations may have been changed. Some scenes are graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Up next, a family mourns an unexpected death.
They came to the conclusion she fell off the step stool and ruled it accidental.
But some things about the scene don't add up.
Was it as it appeared initially, or is there something else going on?
Local police assure everyone there is no foul play. A grieving family disagrees.
They hired a private investigator to take a second look.
And he finds that quiet, rural neighborhoods can harbor some very dark secrets.
They'd only been there for a few months. The finger pointed straight at him.
Michigan is divided into the upper and lower peninsulas. The lower peninsula is famous for being shaped like a mitten. The tiny village of Hubbardston, home to less than 500 people, sits right in the middle of it.
It's a very close-knit community. They all kind of know each other. I love the town of Hubbardston.
For all her 80 years, Hubbardston was home to Bernita Cunningham. The mother of 7 and grandmother of 10 was known to everyone as Billy.
Mom and Dad went to school together. And then after Dad got back from the service, he was in World War II in the South Pacific. They ended up getting married, and my mom lived in the house her whole life. We always called it the good side of town.
In 2006, Billy had been widowed for 17 years. She was notorious for being a creature of habit.
She did the very same thing on every day of the week. Every Tuesday she'd do this, every Wednesday she'd do this, and it wouldn't take long for you to pattern her in Hubbardston, where there's almost zero crime goes on.
So on November 30th, when there was a break in Billy's routine, her next-door neighbors noticed. She didn't come over for an afternoon cup of coffee, which she did every day. And that night, they noticed yet another break in Billy's routine.
One of them got up in the middle of the night and they noticed the lights were on, like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And they thought, oh, Billy must not be sleeping well. In the morning, the curtains were open. She wasn't sitting at the dining room table where she should have been at that time, having her coffee and saying her prayers. And that was suspicious.
So they called Billy's son, Bill Cunningham, who lived just a couple miles down the road, and suggested he come and check on his mother, so he did. And Bill and the neighbor went into the house together and found Billy dead.
Billy was lying face down in the foyer. It looked as if she'd met her death after accidentally falling off a step stool while hanging a Christmas decoration.
They said she hit a very large mirror, shattered it on the floor. Then she went down on the floor and laid there and probably moved around quite a bit, which caused a lot more cuts to take place.
The circumstances of Billy's death were clearly unusual. Local police, who had little to no experience investigating murders, believed the possibility of foul play was unlikely. But to be sure, they still called for an autopsy.
In Michigan, the law really doesn't absolutely require autopsy in any cases. It's always up to the decision of the local medical examiner and then hopefully, but not always, a forensic pathologist to do the case.
This autopsy officially ruled Billy's case an accidental death. She had trauma to her neck and some fractured bones in her face. The pathologist said this damage and the blood at the scene resulted from Billy smashing into the mirror before she hit the floor.
After they found out she was diabetic, they came to the conclusion she fell off the step stool. They ruled it accidental. They said that she probably had a diabetic spell and fell.
Billy's family wasn't so sure. After the scene was processed and Billy's body removed, they were let into the house and immediately grew concerned.
My mom was very organized. The house was always spotless.
Julie and several people described Billy to me as being very organized. Everything is going to be in exact place. She's very neat, and she's really anal about that type of thing.
So it didn't make sense that a lot of things were out of place in rooms far away from where Billy's body was found.
We noticed some things that weren't correct, just some things that were just not characteristic of how Mom would have kept her house, some chairs tipped over and some things like that.
The question now was, if this was not an accidental death, was there any way to prove it? Hubbardston, Michigan, sees very little violent crime. So when Billy Cunningham's death was officially ruled an accident, townspeople didn't give it a second thought, but Billy's family did.
People in town didn't want to believe that Mom was murdered. Couldn't happen in their little town. No, it had to be an accident. They didn't want to believe that she was murdered.
The family didn't just conjure up this murder theory out of thin air. As they did their own post-mortem examination of Billy's house, they noticed all sorts of things that simply didn't make sense. The contents of a care package Billy was preparing for a great-nephew serving in the military were all over the place.
And everybody says, no way would Billy leave something like that laying on the floor.
Perhaps most disturbing was the finding of a family heirloom shattered against one of the walls.
A Christmas Santa Claus statue was broken. A piece of it was 22 feet away in an opposite room.
And this statue shattered with such force that it left a fist-sized dent in the wall.
Where she was found and where she would have fallen if that were what happened, that Christmas decoration wouldn't have gotten around the corner and hit the other side of the living room.
But it was some missing money that convinced Billy's family that police didn't realize they were dealing with a potential murder.
We go back to her bedroom where she kept her purse, and I started going through her wallet, and there was no money. Mom always kept a $100 bill in her, hidden in her wallet for emergencies. That my dad made her do that early on, and there wasn't any there, just some loose change. And I said, something's up here.
Despite an official ruling that there was no foul play, Billy's family was convinced she'd been attacked, and the scene may have been staged to make it look like it was an accident.
We had a cousin that was a retired state trooper, and we told him what we had found, and he said, well, you really need to get a private detective involved in this. And at that point, we did.
Don Brooks, a 25-year veteran of the Michigan State Police and a private investigator for 15 years, was well known and respected by law enforcement all across the state. And after examining photos of the scene, he reached his own preliminary conclusion about how Billy Cunningham died.
Based on what the family told me, based on what the evidence has seen, and based on the amount of blood and amount of injuries, I would have treated it like a homicide from day one.
And as he started asking questions, he uncovered some potentially disturbing information. It turned out that Billy Cunningham was herself worried that she might come to harm in the days before she died.
I learned that Bernita Cunningham, Billy, had a certain amount of fear for a couple of kids in town there.
In the original investigation, these teenagers had been questioned and eliminated as potential suspects. Now, the people involved in this knew technically unofficial investigation, wanted to re-interview them, but these unofficial investigators found themselves in a tough spot.
As a private investigator, I do not want to cross the line and interfere with anything the police investigation is going on at the time, because I know if any of the investigations I did when I was running these as a detective, I would have been a little bit ticked off.
But when the Michigan State Police took their own look at the case, they reached the same conclusion as Don Brooks and Billy Cunningham's family.
It was clear that there was violence at the time of her death. I believed we had a homicide.
But if Billy was murdered, who had a motive to kill her? This, after all, was an elderly woman with no known enemies in a town that saw almost no violent crime.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Is it drained, full of energy, or can it use a jumpstart? BetterHelp wants you to know that it could be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp has connected over 3 million people and counting with licensed therapists, all 100% online. With BetterHelp, you get the benefits of in-person therapy. Plus, it's more convenient, more accessible, and more affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire, and you can get matched with a therapist in less than 48 hours. And if things aren't clicking, switch to a new therapist anytime you want. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/forensic today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/forensic.
After weeks of official and unofficial investigations into the circumstances of Billy Cunningham's death, Michigan State Police became convinced she'd been murdered. The question now was proving it, and some serious obstacles were in the way.
There wasn't a whole lot of evidence at the time. We had some pretty good photographs from the scene the day of. A lot of it was circumstantial evidence up until that point.
One of the biggest problems? After Billy's death was ruled an accident, her house had been cleaned by a company that specialized in cleaning crime scenes, and they were very thorough.
Now keep in mind, the crime scene cleanup crew had been there already and cleaned up the home.
Another problem? The original autopsy, which, despite Billy's considerable injuries, was conducted by a general pathologist, not a forensic pathologist. This turned out to be a crucial distinction in what was now looking less and less like an accidental death.
We had a doctor who was not a forensic pathologist. He was going right along with what the sheriff detective was. Says, this kind of thing doesn't happen around here. And let's see how we can justify these injuries from the crime scene. And that's what they did.
Even worse for investigators, Billy Cunningham had been embalmed and had been buried for weeks. And investigators had already talked to everyone in this small town who had any interaction with Billy Cunningham.
Early on in the investigation, we had probably 30 or 35 persons of interest that we felt necessary to rule out.
But one potential suspect still stood out. Just before her death, Billy Cunningham became concerned about a young man who had recently moved in just across the street from her.
Justin Stevens was originally from Texas. The family he was living with up here in Michigan, he had met while they were living in Texas. He ended up dating one of the girls of the family, and he moved up to Michigan with them. And they were living across the street from where the incident happened.
He was unemployed, but suddenly Justin was known to be in possession of about $100 near the time of the crime.
He was 17 years old and had apparently interacted with Billy Cunningham shortly before her death.
Billy Cunningham went to the neighbors for coffee and mentioned to them that the neighbor boy came over to my house this morning, asked if he could borrow a phone, and offered to help me put up Christmas decorations.
Billy told her neighbors she didn't want this young man in her house, so she handed him her landline phone and insisted he make the call from the foyer. But phone records showed no call from Billy's phone during this time period. It looked as if Justin faked needing to make a phone call so he could get inside Billy's house.
We were able to determine that, with a strong likelihood, that Justin's knocking on Billy's door that morning was a ruse. So my theory was that he had cased the house that morning. I was able to pull phone records for her landline for that date, and we determined that there were no outgoing phone calls that day.
I didn't go over there. I mean, I've been over there. I didn't go over there that day.
We know that's not true. The why, we don't know. Why this fight occurred, we don't know. Unless Justin Stevens tells us.
Justin Stevens does not know.
Even more concerning, a background check on Justin Stevens revealed some disturbing information.
Justin Stevens had quite a criminal history. Almost all of them were burglary. One was an assault. So his criminal history fed into the theory that he had burglarized Billy's home and assaulted her.
In the story, Justin was telling detectives that Billy had invited him into her house made no sense to anyone who knew her.
Well, that in itself is a red flag for me. A teenage boy offering to help an 80-year-old woman hang Christmas decorations, I considered abnormal.
Once Michigan investigators concluded that Billy Cunningham had been murdered, all roads led to Justin Stevens, but detectives had no physical evidence until they got an incredible and, as far as they knew, unprecedented break. The company that cleaned the scene after Billy's death was in the business of cleaning crime scenes. Despite local police telling them they were cleaning up an accident, this cleaning crew had seen a lot of crime scenes, and they weren't so sure.
The people that came to do the cleanup also voiced their opinion that there's something not right here.
And so, this cleaning company kept some items from Billy's house in storage on the off chance they might get a call from investigators, which is exactly what happened.
I contacted those people at that time and talked to them, and they said, "We're kind of glad to hear from you." And they said, "We're not buying it. She had way too many injuries. For what, you know, the scene showed, there is a massive amount of blood, and it was over a fairly large area."
In this crime scene cleanup company's unofficial evidence locker, detectives found parts of the shattered mirror.
Six hairs were pulled from that wall mirror, five of which were determined to be gray and female. There's an assumption that most of those were probably Billy's hairs, but one hair was an animal hair.
The people that Justin was living with across the street had dogs. Me and Detective Morey traveled to their house where they had moved to and obtained samples from those two dogs that they had. It was packaged and sent to UC Davis for DNA testing to be compared to the hair that was seized at the house.
Even if that single hair placed Justin Stevens at the scene, prosecutors had a huge problem. Billy Cunningham's death had been officially ruled an accident, which any good lawyer would use to create reasonable doubt with a jury. So investigators made an unusual decision. They decided to exhume Billy's body and redo her autopsy, even though she'd been embalmed and buried for weeks. And for this autopsy, investigators turned to a pathologist who was used to dealing with suspicious deaths.
They just decided, look, let's just take it to a forensic pathologist and have a re-look. So about 2.5 months or so later, that's what happened. She was exhumed and sent over here.
As in the first examination, Dr. Cole saw extensive damage to the victim's neck.
She did have some cuts on the skin made by something sharp, could have been glass. But upon examining the body, some of these sharp force wounds penetrated rather deeply into the body, and that was inconsistent with her falling on the floor and shards of glass from a broken mirror cutting her. And as I probed some of these wounds, I said, man, these are stab wounds. You're not going to get stab wounds from a broken mirror.
This answered why there was so much blood at the scene. In the second autopsy, Dr. Cole determined another detail missed in the first autopsy.
She also had some fractures of her face, including the nose and some facial bones. That's a blunt force injury, and that's a severe blunt force injury. You're not going to get that from falling off a stool and from sharp shards. So it looked like there was a lot more going on than just a simple accidental fall.
This second autopsy led to a conclusion that directly contradicted the original finding.
This was an unusual case in which we did a 180-degree turn from accident to homicide, and that was satisfying. I felt pretty good about that.
Prosecutors believe Justin Stevens had been casing Billy's house and knew she often left her door unlocked. On the day of her murder, that's what she did. And Justin later confessed that he slipped into the house while she was gone. He was looking for money or something to steal when Billy unexpectedly returned. She grabbed her phone to call 911. Justin overpowered her, shattering the hall mirror. Justin had to act fast, grab the nearest thing at hand, and hit Billy with the Santa statue. Justin apparently decided there was no turning back. He stabbed Billy to death, then may have staged the scene to make it look as if she accidentally fell off a step stool. And it almost worked. Except for one thing he missed. A shard of glass covered with Billy's blood held a hair from a dog who lived in his house.
And that was huge. In my 22 years as a detective, this was only the second homicide that I ever investigated that involved animal hair. And the first that resulted in a positive match.
In 2011, a jury deliberated for just 3 hours before finding Justin Stevens guilty of first-degree murder. As a minor, when he killed Billy Cunningham, his sentence was ultimately decided at a minimum of 40 years and a maximum of 60 years in prison. As for Billy's family, they mourn her loss, but are gratified that science proved their hunch was right all along. Her death was no accident.
I think we all believed it would happen, that we would get justice eventually, but we didn't know how long it would take.
My satisfaction is from watching the family get resolution. They were right, and I'm so happy for them.
I have to admit there were times in this investigation where I was getting frustrated. This went on for 4 years. And ultimately, when Justin was found guilty, I absolutely felt like it was worth every minute of those 4 years.